Hello, my magical friends. My name is Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 76th time listening, we welcome you to our space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. We have some very yummy news. I've been watching some stuff, and then we'll get to today's very magical topic. Thank you so much to Charlie and Kristen for donating to my Ko-fi every month and therefore helping to support the podcast. Monthly subscribers to Ko-fi do get extra bonus content, and in particular, I recently released a list of upcoming episodes and recordings, and I actually am going to post up a new list which contains the next 10 things I'm going to be recording. So I have set up Ko-fi so that you can be a one-time donator to check out this information. But basically, if you want to check it out, then you can see what's coming up and also talk about it either on Ko-fi or use the Discord channel, because we have a special Discord role for people who donate to the podcast. You know, if you have anything you want to make sure is mentioned about the episode before we even start recording, or something that, you know, I could add as a comment in the top of the show before the episode itself starts proper, you know, just leave a little note and I would be happy to include it in the episode in question. So, of course, we have to start today's news about Delicious Party Precure, the 19th season of the Pretty Cure franchise. Just to catch everyone up, typically the website update would happen on December 26th, according to past seasons, and around that time there would be a reveal of the character introductions, as well as some information about themes and mottos of the season to coincide with the reveal in print via children's magazines like Tanno Shiyotian. However, this time around, I got the magazine, and in fact, if you saw a picture floating around showing the Tropical Rouge Precure's legendary Kira with a phone-shaped shadow over it revealing her name, that was my picture. And I learned a lot about my reach when I saw it posted all over the place, but anyway, Delicious Party Precure was not in fact revealed. But the magazine did mention that a special item would go along with the next issue, and that it would be revealed on the 9th. Now, to be fair, it was not clear if the reveal would be for this season in general or just this magazine item, so fandom reactions were mixed. In Japan, after a few days passed with no announcement, most people decided to just go with the 9th as the reveal date and took any early reveal as a surprise, but others weren't so patient, so it was an interesting time. Now, Sunday the 9th, I woke up at 6 a.m. Japanese time and found the site was open, so I rushed to my computer to translate the site bios and introduction. This was the first year I'd done something like this, so I didn't know how much attention I would get. And I know that both Leo, aka Magical Cinnamon, and Charlie and Cassidy of Precure Podcast Engaged use my thread for their own content, so thanks a lot for that. I hadn't had any caffeine at that time, and I did not do a perfect translation job because, well, I'm a fan and I was just going off the context I could see on the site. So especially when it comes to things like the catchphrases and so on, you know, just take it with a grain of salt. There will probably be some changes, or I shouldn't say changes because it's my stuff is not official. But anything that is like that, that might be a little different, that's going to be why. But yeah, I would just, you know, talk to other Precure fans about translations. We're still waiting for news regarding the comic itself. We haven't seen any art from it, but speaking of the Kamikita twins, the second volume of their other comic in Nakayoshi magazine, Unrivaled Naomi, is going to be released in February, so I'm really looking forward to that. Unrivaled Naomi is the comic that is inspired by the life of Naomi Osaka, but is also a space, tennis, epic, magical girl series, and I do highly recommend it if you can read Japanese. At the moment, there is still no official English translation, but I really hope that they get to it soon, because it deserves. Now, let's move on to what I've been watching. So, due to the break on January 2nd for the holiday and my new schedule at work, My weekly watches are continuing, but at different time slots. So as such, I missed the Watcha Primaji special, which seems to not be airing anywhere after the fact. So I'm not sure what's going on there, because the next episode is episode 14. So it's kind of like this in-between special. I'm not sure. But in any case, I missed it, and I have not yet watched this week's Kirameki Powers, but I probably will either today or tomorrow, so I'm sure to talk about that next time. But in any case, of course, I watched Tropical Roost Precure, and it got so interesting. Of course, this is the final month, you know, just the last few episodes, and yeah, there is just so much going on. It was so exciting. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens. Of course, this transition time between Precure seasons is always a little sad, because of course we know we're going to have a new story and new friends to make, but we don't want to see the old ones go either. So yeah, it's been a very fun season, and I am looking forward to at some point going back to revisit it to talk about it on the podcast. Finally, I finished another series last week, Lollirock. This is the French musical magical battle heroine series from 2014. I only watched the first season, and I really enjoyed it generally, and I love the characters. There were a lot of aspects that felt very classic magical girl, but there were some fun new elements as well. I'm really looking forward to checking out the second season, since the first didn't really have a traditional end at all, if that makes sense. I'm trying to say it as unspoilery as possible. I can see why this show is super popular. I hope even if this show doesn't get a continuation in the future, that at least we have the framework for even more magical girls like this moving forward in the West. So that's all I've been watching, so let's move on to today's topic. I am so excited, everyone, for today's episode. You don't even know. We are revisiting Precure. It's been a little while since we've done a Precure episode. They're getting a little less frequent. And in fact, I haven't actually started to watch the next season that we will be talking about, which is exciting. We are talking about my current favorite season of Precure, Maholtsky Precure. It also has other names. We'll get to that later, but this series is special to me, not just as a Precure series, but as a magical girl series. I won't get into it now because I do get into it later, but I am just so excited. I feel like we talked for so long today, and yet we missed so many important things. Like, I don't know, there is so much that could be talked about with this show in particular. You know, this is a season that is harkening back to the original stuff, but also harkening back to older magical girls. In fact, since recording this episode, I have actually found another magical girl series that it referenced that I didn't realize. So there is just so much going on with this season that I'm really excited to talk about. I kind of ended up not really getting to talking about the characters themselves as people, if that makes sense. So I just wanted to quickly shout out how much I love our main characters, Midai and Liko. And I did also want to point out, for anyone who was wondering about her name, during this conversation, I referred to Cure Magical's civilian form as Liko. And our guest, Blazix, refers to her as both Liko and Riko. And I just wanted to point out quickly, because we didn't get to it in the actual main chat, the reason for this confusion comes from the fact that, well, first starters, for the very beginning of the series, we didn't really have anything signifying the spelling of the characters' names in English, and Riko happens to be a quite common Japanese girl's name, like extremely, extremely common. So it was presumed that her name would be spelled in that way, you know, R-I-K-O. But through the actual series itself, we start to see that the spelling is L-I-K-O instead, which was a little bit of a surprise. There is some early stuff, like basically in the actual text of the narrative that is Maholtsky Precure, you can see exactly one time where her name is misspelled as R-I-K-O, but every other time it is L-I-K-O, so that's what I default to, and that's what I would default to if I get to ever, for example, translate officially the comic or book or whatever. This is something that I also didn't mention, but I think is interesting. This is the final series of Precure that has a novel that goes along with the story. So there are only two junior novels of Precure. The others, sometimes people call them light novels, but I don't think that's really quite the accurate description because they're more of a junior high school level, if that makes sense. You know, light novels are usually for a slightly older demographic and stuff, so the writing style is different. But in any case, the Go Princess and Mahoutsky novels are skewed even younger and are full of pictures that are primarily just black and white screenshots from the series. But I really enjoyed the book because it is a time travel story, which is really interesting. I have gone on many tirades about my feelings about why these kinds of publications are not translated, and I really hope this does get an official translation someday. But yeah, I thought that was interesting to note that we haven't had any books written for Precure since Mahoutsky. So I think that's just about everything. I wanted to also leave in a quick warning for this episode and for the show itself. As we talk about, there are some instances of cultural insensitivity, nothing super bad, but it is present. And the other thing that I wanted to mention was the use of childish humor that is in a lot of other children's media, but that plays into transphobic tropes. So yeah, just keep that in mind as you listen and as you watch the series. It happens precisely one time. It's in an episode that is very plot relevant, so it's hard to avoid, but that is something to keep in mind. So with that, let's go to our conversation with the YouTuber Blazix about Mahoutsky Precure. So today we are here to talk about Mahoutsky Precure, also known as Mahout Girls Precure, and also known as Witchy Precure from 2016. And I'm very excited for our new guest. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi everyone, my name is Blazix. I go by the pronouns he, him. I'm an African American who likes magical girls. Best way to describe me is just a small YouTuber who just likes to make videos. Most of my channel is just reaction based. I would love to do more Precure stuff like my friends. I'm even thinking about doing just a whole series where I'm dedicating just how strong a certain cure is, since a lot of them are very strong. I'm also working on a fan-made series where I'm essentially bringing the Precures all together in one area to fight an unstoppable force with the help of some new friends.
Ooh, sounds very interesting. Great. Before we get started with this series, what is your history with magical girls?
You probably find this hilarious, but I actually grew up watching a couple magical girls. I would say the earliest magical girl I grew up with was Winx Club. Mm-hmm. I grew up with it, I believe it was around 4Kids time, but I could be wrong. I was very young at the time. The other series that I remember fondly growing up was when I was older and I was watching the show Witch, which essentially is just a witch series. It just takes a slightly dark turn. One fact about this series is that the letters in Witch each spell out the different girl's name. And growing up, I didn't really see any other magical girl, but as I started to grow up and I graduated high school, the first series I jumped into was actually Precure. I went throughout the entire Precure and watched it from Fatiwa all the way up to the current season. And currently, I am trying to get into Sailor Moon. I'm actually getting into, I believe it is the third season, which is Sailor Moon Super, I believe?
Well, Super is the third season, so Super Z is the fourth season. So it depends on whether or not there's an S in there. That extra S is the hint there. But yeah, that's really interesting. And, you know, definitely no judgment getting into Winx Club and Witch as your first ones. Those are both very solid and very popular magical girl seasons shows, I should say. So you got into Precure when?
When I graduated from high school, it was in 2016.
Okay.
But By then, I was basically getting into anime. So I decided, why not finish the series that I was watching, which at the time, I was watching Fatewa Precure dub. So I didn't get into the sub until at least Max Art. And then, thanks to my friend telling me what order to watch Precure in, along with the All-Stars and the movies, I essentially finished the entirety of Precure, catching up to my favorite season, Mahoutsukai, at around December.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So that's very interesting that you got in through to this series, this season in particular, as it was airing. And that's just so much Precure to get through, honestly, so kudos. Yeah, but you're here because Mahoutsukai Precure is one of your favorites. So what is it that you love about Mahoutsukai Precure?
When I first started this series, I didn't think much of it because it kind of plays off the fact that we have a duo. But what I didn't realize when going into it the first time is that this duo is completely different from Max Heart, Blast Stars, and Sweet, whereas we have two characters that are both from separate worlds and are able to transform together. Mirai is a human from, obviously, the human world, and Riko is from the magic world. So it's a big difference between the two, and it doesn't just set up the relationship between the two right away like it would for any other season. It sets up that they're completely different, but can learn to work together for a common threat. The other thing that really makes it is, I want to say, a fan favorite, Muffaron. And what makes this character interesting is that with the other seasons I mentioned, Max Heart and Splash Stars, they transform with their mascots and hold hands. But what is different about this is that with Max Heart and Splash Stars, their mascots are their transformation items, and they transform into said items. With Muffaron, she is essentially the transformation item, but she doesn't transform into a certain transformation item. She is just the teddy bear, and essentially, if they wanted to, they could just use her for a form change if they wanted to, but it's interesting, and I love this about it. I also love the idea of magic. It's kind of something that I love about certain series. Like, if you are able to incorporate the magic world and to do your own spin on things while staying true to what kind of lore is behind it, it's something that I enjoy and I am impressed by every single time.
Yeah, for me, this season of Precure is not just like an amazing season of Precure. Like being able to balance, the tradition of magic use with a magical girl fighting series, and then also just having really so many elements balance off of, what Precure has been before, as well as what other magical girl series have been like. For me, there is so much here that is referencing a lot of older shows that are also classics. And, I think it's really interesting that you are only now checking out Sailor Moon and stuff. But like for me, this season has Sailor Moon, it has Ojimajo Dotemi in it. It has even some aspects of even older stuff. Like it just is really, really fascinating as a season of magical girls, not just as a season of Precure. So I'm also very excited to talk about it. Yeah. So for anyone who is listening who has not watched the series yet, which they really should, like we said, this is a series that incorporates two different worlds. We have the magic world and the no magic world, as the magic world calls our world. And our main character, Mirai Asahina, is a normal Japanese schoolgirl who happens to come across someone flying in the sky at night and ends up meeting Liko, who is a witch in her own right. Well, they use the word Mahoutsukai in this series rather than witch, though even it is called Witchy Precure in its official English. It's so complicated. Like even the way that they trademarked the series, they trademarked the English title of Maho Girls Precure. I still don't know quite why, but I still remember when they first announced the series, with this phrase, queue up Rapapa, and saying that two worlds would be combined and all of that. Like the excitement when we found out there was going to be like another duo series was like very exciting. Because, like, you mentioned Sweet Precure before, and while Sweet Precure is a series that starts off with two girls, they don't have to transform together. It's not quite the same. But Mahousqai Precure is referencing how in, you know, Futariba Precure and in Splash Star, we have two girls who must transform together with their mascots turned into transformation devices. And it was like, yeah, very exciting time. But yeah, so we have, you know, this blending of two worlds, and almost right away, you know, once the girls end up discovering that they are Precure after battling for the first time, they, we should probably mention that Mofurun as a teddy bear, as you said, she was just a regular teddy bear that Mirai carried around with her always. It's a teddy bear she's had since she was a baby. But when Mirai and Liko got their powers, that also was through Mofurun. So she came to life, and that was like super exciting as well. Uh-huh. Yeah, it is with the three of them that they become the Precure. And in this season is also interesting in that usually the Precure are referenced in past season as being legendary warriors, but in this season they are the legendary magic users or legendary witches or however you want to call it.
That's something that's very interesting about this season, because we've always referenced them as just legendary warriors in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, just legendary warriors in the past. With this season, it kind of marks that, oh, we can't just use legendary warriors, so let's just make them legendary magicians or witches, because apparently witches is what they want to call our team. I kind of find it interesting because they obviously use the term Mahousqai. Mm-hmm. And I've seen some translations that translates Mahousqai to wizard,
mm-hmm.
or witch.
Yeah.
Depends on which translation you use. And
this is one of those things that's like a language problem, where Mahousqai is not gendered, but witch and wizard is gendered in English. So no matter how you try to translate it, like, it's very difficult to translate it without adding gender that wasn't there originally, if that makes sense. I think that for the sake of ease, which is fine, right? For example, in the 90s, we had the series Mahousqai Tai that is called the Magic Users Club in English. So they translate Mahousqai as magic user, which is very literal, but, you know, doesn't have any gender because it's a group of both male and female characters in that case.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so we have these two worlds coming together. They go to the magic world. There's all this lore that's kind of thrown in explaining how everything works. And that's really fun for Mirai to learn about the magic world and all of that. And they're in between the school years. So Mirai gets the chance to start studying magic, because once she arrives in the magic world, she gets her own magic wand just by nature, literally. In this world, they sprout from trees and are presented to magic users or witches. And it's just like really interesting to see how they go into like all this stuff about like studying magic. They make friends with other witches who worked with them, and, you know, they become fast friends. And they have, you know, a series of adventures the first few weeks before they go back to the no magic world to go to a regular non-magic school. And so Liko also lives with Mirai for a time, and yeah, just a lot of stuff going on. And then as far as the villains, so we see in the beginning this guy Dokurokushi, who is the wizard of darkness, and he has four different servants or minions that, you know, one at a time are going after the Precure, because they are after the stone called the Lingle Stone Emerald. And it turns out there's a whole bunch of these stones, and throughout the first half of the season, they are collecting the stones. Some of them enhance their magic powers when they fight. Some of them help them to transform into other forms. So this is a really fun season in that they have form changes with completely different fighting styles, which is, again, just like super exciting. In their studies, they find in the school library a very interesting book it's called the Smart Book, the Lingle Smart Book, I think, in English, if I'm not mistaken. In Japanese, it's a kind of pun on a smartphone, because it's a smahon. But anyway, this is, you know, obviously one of the toys. You know, inside is a little fairy baby that they first call Ha-chan. But over time, throughout the first half of the season, she grows up little by little, is able to talk and all of that. And they also use the jewels to feed her and things like that. And she is just clearly a super powerful baby. Yeah, and then I guess, you know, by the midway point is when she finally grows up to be about their age. But yeah, what do you think of the first round of villains? So our Wizard of Darkness and his little evil animal friends.
Immediately after seeing him, I didn't know what to expect, but as the series progressed and we kind of saw that he was a skeleton, I kept calling him Skeletor. And it's only because of when he's introduced and how he's presented as this intimidating threat. But when we see him near the end of his run, he looks like a very buff Skeletor. I won't say he is as intimidating as other bosses, but in terms of just how he overwhelms the cures, he's a very powerful threat. And that's kind of what leads to one of my favorite characters in this series, who is the headmaster, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So we don't know too much about his characters. He has a soft spot for basically the old legends. We know that he is a very charming man. Mm-hmm. We also know that there is a food in the series called a frozen mandarin that when shown off in episode 2, you can basically melt it with magic and eat the insides of it like an orange. There is a joke in the series that the headmaster will just eat the frozen mandarin just frozen solid.
Yeah.
So I find that hilarious. Kind of why he becomes one of my favorite side characters. But he isn't just for show. Essentially, he knows that there is a threat in the magic world. And at one point, he even goes to Dukuraxi and fights him head on. Just kind of one of my favorite scenes is him fighting and the cures just show up in his lair with him, Druxy, in a magical duel, and they're surprised to see him.
Yeah, the headmaster is really fascinating. We never find out his name, but, you know, he's a headmaster of the magic school. He also famously never uses magic in his daily life as much as he can. So you kind of know that if he's going to use magic, that means he means business.
As for the other villains, well, I did like Gamatsu. He is the turtle general, I'm going to call him. And essentially, he's one of the ones that will really show his stuff in a fight because he is kind of a, he's kind of a character type I like in Precure that they rarely use, but is a villain that has morals. Like, he will show up in a fight and will say he is the strongest, but if you impress him enough, he will let you go. He really shouldn't, with as strong as he is, but he lets you go in a fight if you impress him enough. And that's kind of where we see him in. I believe he is introduced around the same time we get the Mahouskai Sapphire forms. He essentially doesn't do anything. He just makes a monster of the week, and he watches from up above. But in his final fight, we see that he has another form. In the first form, he is kind of, again, he's a giant turtle, but he will take off his shell, and he goes from a slow turtle to an incredibly fit, a different build, I guess you could say. His shell is completely gone in this final fight, and he has a ponytail, which doesn't really add on to anything, but it's just a note that he has a ponytail in his final form. And again, he kind of plays off as the muscle of all three generals. And honestly, my personal favorite of all of four of Dukuraxi's minions.
Yeah, it's really interesting. They do have like this very distinct personality. I think referencing again the original Study What Precure and Max Heart in particular is that this is a series that had like a whole bunch of villains, and the villains change at the halfway point. At that time, it was because, you know, they were originally going to make a much shorter series, but then they were approved, greenlit to continue the series. And they're like, oh, well, now we have to make a whole bunch of new villains. But because they had destroyed them all. But like, you know, this series, I think that the kind of halfway point and the changing from the Dark Magicians to the second group of villains is really interesting and kind of like makes sense as like a leveling up or whatever. But that being said, I still think that the original set of minions are a lot stronger in character than the ones that we see later on. I'm not particularly sure why that is, but I think it is very interesting.
There was also a spider villain that, in my opinion, I respect spider villains a lot more. I definitely think that Precure should use them a lot more because I think, generally speaking, I like the idea of fighting back against bugs, and with certain cures, they're afraid of bugs. So it would be interesting to see how, as the series progresses and this villain keeps on appearing, if a cure will be better with bugs. And we even see in one episode that Liko is afraid of the giant caterpillars in the tree in the magic world. It's actually a very funny scene.
Yes.
And I think, I honestly find this hilarious. But again, didn't really think much of her character. Kind of think she was the weakest of the generals.
I think it's interesting, like, you know, it's a set of four villains. Only one of them is a female villain. Yes, Sparta is her name. And she's interesting in that, like, she creates traps and stuff like that. Like, she definitely, they're working with that spider theme a lot with her plans to try to capture the emerald. But I could definitely see her being seen as, like, a kind of a weaker character. I think in general, with villains as well as, like, with cures and all of that, like, people tend to, like, really resonate with particular types of characters more. And so that might be why I thought she was pretty cool. But just my opinion. Yeah.
Then we have the, I won't say last because we also have a lizard, but we also have kind of my second favorite, which is Batty. And he is the first villain that the Cures ever face. He is like an interesting villain because he kind of just shows up in the non-magic world, honestly, out of nowhere. Because if they're looking for an emerald, I was expecting him to have more of a humanoid disguise, as we've seen from Fatiwa when the original villains had humanoid forms. I was kind of thinking, are they going to pull off a dark magician's, and then as the series progress, they would get more monstrous forms? No, just out about looking for the emerald in his bat form. So I kind of find that hilarious. I thought he was actually interesting because when he is also fighting the Cures, he also absorbs Gamatsu and Sparta's powers, and he becomes a spider bat turtle monster. And it's such an interesting form, and I loved Mahoutsky for pulling this off because it really showed that they got creative when it came to their villain design.
Yeah.
Because he has six arms, four of them have fists, the other just has a pincher. Honestly, he looked like a really cool looking skeleton with like fish fins and a big bat attached to a shell. Honestly, I loved his design and I really wish we could have seen it more.
Yeah, that was a very interesting thing. And like in general, you know, just referencing that part, because like what happens as far as the monsters of the week, the Yokubarus, what we have is like they will take two items from wherever they are and then attach them to this thing. But near the end, each of these villains decides to kind of tie themselves to that evil and become part of the Yokubaru. So like, I think the most infamous one is Sparta becoming part helicopter. But in general, like it does get really interesting and creative with those combinations that they do, like throughout the whole season, because the Monster of the Week doesn't particularly change. It does kind of level up later on, but yeah, it is very, very interesting for sure.
And then we have the attendant to Dokuroxy, which is Yamo. He is interesting in a way that I thought they were actually going to pull a Splash Stars and have him. But I'm actually great that they didn't do this because it, again, it plays off of the fact that Splash Stars did it, so we also have to do it too. I think it was interesting because he, I'm going to save it for the second half. When we talk about it.
Yeah, he's the only one that kind of really continues on story-wise, so he does become more and more relevant. But he's interesting in a lot of ways, for sure, because, like, Dokurokushi is this guy who, he was, like, a human, like wizard, but he got too into dark magic, and that is what turned him into the skeleton man that he is. But he basically can't talk anymore because he's a skeleton, and so Yamo is the one who is like speaking for him because he can sense his will or whatever, and that kind of connection is both good for him and then also kind of bad, but we'll see more about that. Yeah. So before we get into our spoilery point here, there's so much, like at the beginning with, learning about the magic world, getting all that lore in, and then going back to the human world. And it's super fun to see all these different like things. Like you have a set of friends that they have in the magic world, a set of friends in the human world. You can see that their friendship is very interesting, and like Mira and Liko are, they're both very fun characters to see in action because like their personalities really are quite different, but they're really a good pair in the end. And I did want to mention that like in general, because like you mentioned, like there are some things that are really funny about the series. Like in general, the comedy of this season is also like really strong and really, really good. When I first watched this season, it was actually in my like point of which I was moving back to Japan, like as it was starting. And so at the beginning of the year, I was able to watch, but about the midway point, actually, I think I want to say it was episode 21, that I suddenly was kind of unable to keep watching because of my job. So I remember thinking like, wow, we're really defeating this villain really quickly. What's going to happen after this? And so I think that again, this very much is hearkening back to earlier iterations of Precure. But yeah, getting to the second half. So we do have, as far as the villains go, this very interesting kind of in between where we see this mysterious orange genie who has come out of the desert in the magic world where Liko's father has been working. He's kind of like an archaeologist or something like that. So this genie kind of like sneaks out of there after being awakened, and he revives Yamo, who was basically just completely destroyed by the final battle.
Yeah, he was just kind of a tail, if I remember
Yes,
correctly.
so they go along with the idea, like lizards, they can detach their tails. That's like a thing in nature. Not all of them, of course, but some can. And so that tail is used to bring him back to life, basically. And it's like very astounding magic that should not work, but it does. He believes he's been brought back to life by his, service to Dokurokushi, who is now a pile of bones. His spirit does leave. So there is that aspect, because, like, you find out that he was a professor at the magic school, and he was also very close to the headmaster. And the headmaster, we don't know exactly how old he is, but he's very old and uses magic to disguise himself as looking younger. So it's like mysterious. It's one of the mysteries of the magic
Yeah,
world.
that's kind of something that I found both interesting and weird at the same time. We talked about this before, that he doesn't really use a lot of his magic, but when he does use his magic, it's when some serious stuff happens. It's mainly because he's saving his magic to destroy Dokuroxy, but because his spells fail and he runs out of magic, he himself becomes kind of an older man with a very long beard. Kind of reminds me of Merlin from the old Disney movie that I'm blanking on.
Oh, like the Sword and the Stone.
Yes, I think that's the name of the movie. And even the crystal ball, who, fun fact, the crystal ball is alive and she has her own sentience. And she is also kind of an older woman, and she sounds it when the headmaster also becomes an older man.
Yeah, she's an interesting character. Like that's also, again, a toy you can buy now. The her name is Kathy. I think it's so funny. Like she's like just like an actual kind of living thing, and she is like a recurring character throughout the season because when they're in the non-magic world, they also get to have their own version of her. So it is really interesting to see that, like, yeah, when he uses all his power, he suddenly a lot older, and that was a surprise to everyone. And we see that happen to him like a few times in the series, but we still don't know exactly how old he is, but we know he's very old. So we don't know how long it's been since Dokudokushi, or as he was previously known as just Kushi, became evil and all of that. But his spirit does get saved. We see him kind of like float away into heaven, I guess. So what is left is just some dark magic bones that Yamo uses, and as he uses each one, they become the next level of Yokubaru, the Don Yokubaru. And so it is in this like kind of in-between time that they encounter a new Precure. So at this point, I do want to put in the spoiler warning. So for anyone who has not watched this season yet, please go watch it. It's so good. and yeah, we're going to start talking about the mid-season cure. So as we had mentioned before, there was a little fairy that they were taking care of named Hachan, who was very cute. And she was starting to get a little older, aging very quickly. but it is near the end of everything in the final battle that like she vanishes. And it's a really hard time for Mirai and Liko as well, because they are, yeah, they're sad. They like basically lost a child, because like they and Mofudun were all taking care of her. Mofudun says, you know, that Hachan has three moms. So it is a very interesting, sad time for them, but they have to keep fighting. And lo and behold, they're able to meet a new Precure who looks like an older woman. Like she's a lot older than they are, it seems. But she is Cure Felice, or Cure Happiness, and she is a new legend. So like the legend of Precure before that had been that they were two witches, and now there's a third one, so breaking the tradition of the legend, I suppose. And she is just immediately so powerful, and it's really, really fun to see her in action. But it is after all of that that they realize that she is actually their Hachan. But now that she is her regular human form, I guess you could say, she now is about the same age as them. So she starts going to school with them and all of that as well. So that's really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, when they're introduced, it kind of in a period where after Hachan disappeared, they didn't know what happened to her. She just basically disappeared. I want to say she saved Dukuraxi's soul, or maybe it was the Emerald who saved his soul. I'm not exactly sure. I actually need to rewatch it because it still is confusing to me.
So, you know, the reason that Dokudokushi became all-powerful is that he swallowed up the Emerald finally. And the Emerald is, each stone has a different theme. The Emerald is the stone of life. And that is also why it's very important to Hachan. So it's just like a whole thing. I think in a way it was like a kind of combination, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. And then during the time when they were looking for Hachan, both in magic and the non-magic world, there was also a moment in the episode where Riko also talked about going back to the non-magic, to the magic world, I should say. She's living in the non-magic world. And Mirai comes up with an idea of just spending the time together, going shopping, getting cookies, eating cookies from Mafuron's perspective. And when they are all by themselves, Yamo basically turns this, I believe it was a cricket with a rocket tied to it.
Yeah.
And uses it to attack them. And they are basically overwhelmed because it kind of powers up because it's essentially Dukuraxi's power. So at that moment, not only are they overwhelmed, we see the appearance in a couple times during the episode of a young girl where she's basically wearing the same colors as Hachan and she has the same hair as Hachan. And then during the battle, the young girl appears, the smart tome goes directly towards her, and the area itself is in an area that is dark. I've never actually seen this in Mahout's Sky, and it's kind of a bit interesting, and I kind of wish that we saw that a little bit more. But after that, her power unleashes, and the sky turns back to being a beautiful sky blue. And this is when we get Cure Felice's transformation and her fight, showing off that she is actually on another level, but not too much stronger than Miracle and Magical.
Mm-hmm. It was so exciting to see. And also, like, her transformation sequence is really great. Talking about, like, referencing previous Magical Girl series, like, Ha-chan's whole character is very, very much the same as Hana from Ojamajo Doremi, who started off as a magical baby that they had to take care of. And then by the final season, she, by the force of will, grows up and becomes the same age as her moms and starts going to school and all of that. And is also just a very, very powerful witch baby. So now we have a very powerful fairy baby who has become a magical warrior. And it is, like, so fun to see, like, her design and everything is really cool. Just, like, generally, yeah.
She actually looks like a real fairy. Mm-hmm. Because in both prior seasons, before and after Mahouskai, we've always get the reference that the cute little creature that comes to our world is essentially a fairy. Mm-hmm. But Ha-chan, aka Kotaha, is essentially a fairy, mm-hmm. by the first half of the series and when she transforms into Felice. And I thought that was honestly a great design to give her kind of like a fairy-esque design with like a puffy skirt to match.
Yeah, I think the idea of fairies, like the way that they usually are in Precure, you're right, is a little different as like the kind of mascot that you might see in many Magical Girl series. But yeah, Ha-chan, or for Kotoha, is a fairy, as in like the Western European idea of fairy. And of course, a lot of the magic world and so on, there's a lot of European influence throughout the series, so there's that. But yeah, I think, you know, it's just a very, very beautiful design. She was very exciting. I remember that year, like, I knew a lot of kids who just were obsessed with Cure Felice, and they thought she was so pretty and they wanted to be like her and all of that. So I think she's really great. It's a mid-season for sure. Yeah, and she gets her own wand. It's actually the pen that comes with the smart book, but the wand is also just super powerful and gets turned into weapon and all of that. But yeah, at the same time, now she is a human, so she has to start learning about living life, especially in the non-magic world as a human, trying to do her best. Because she is, again, using magic that is even amazing for the magic world, but she's trying to use it in the non-magic world, which you're not allowed to do. It's a whole big thing about how the worlds are separate.
Yeah, and basically keeping magic away from the non-magic world. But that is a rule that Mirai and Riko sometimes always breaks. And even in the episode where Mirai brings Riko back to her house, one of the teachers, I believe, is coming in on an umbrella, and I'm also thinking, like, she broke her own rule that she lectured Riko about.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that this is one of those things where, so we know there's a train that you can take to go between the worlds. The snail, it's very cute.
Very cute.
It's kind of implied throughout that we understand that, like, actually there are a lot of people from the magic world in the non-magic world just living their life, and a lot of them go there, they'll like study non-magic things there, or you know, like have their careers there and then come back or whatever. Like, it is very fascinating to see. And so for that reason, we know that like they're probably using magic on the side or whatever, but for the most part they are living a non-magic life, at least publicly. But yeah, that part is fun. I think also, you know, it never hurts to have a Mary Poppins reference, right? I think that was the main thing.
I didn't even think that.
Yeah.
When watching it.
Yeah, Mary Poppins is a very popular and important influence for early magical girls. So, like, it's just, like, a very simple little fun thing, I think, more than anything. If you try to, like, think too hard about the rules, then it can get complicated, but that's true for most series, I think. But yeah, so like, you know, Ha-chan or Kotoha is trying her best to like live a normal life, but she cannot help it. She loves to use magic and she is very, very good at it. And so there are a lot of fun shenanigans. And 7 or 8 episodes later is when we finally get a new update to the girls' power, all three together, after they have kind of established themselves as a three-person team and all of that. That's really fun. So this episode is very interesting. So the Cinderella episode of Mahoutsuka is a very unique episode. It is, like, really incredible, but also in a lot of ways, like, I feel like it's something that I have to warn people against, because it's not necessarily completely perfect, but it is this weird fever dream in which Mofurun imagines herself as the star of the Cinderella story. And so it just seems like a dream, right? Like, no big deal. But they kind of, like, touch upon the Cinderella story, where Mirai and Liko talk about the differences between Cinderella for the two worlds. All the different characters from the Cinderella story are being portrayed by different characters in our world of Witchy Precure. And it's super, super fun, because you have, like, little mice and little fairy. Kotoha is the fairy godmother character. The dark magicians, who at this point have been long dead, are portraying the the stepmother and stepsisters of the story, which is a little kind of weird in that Batty and Gametsu are both dressed like hideous women, which is not really a joke that works well anymore for me. I mean, I know this is from a few years ago, but I hope that people can stop doing this joke at some point in the future. It is a little iffy. But in any case, like, they go through the whole story. For some reason, the prince is the headmaster, which is, like, really weird, but sure. Like, again, it's, like, very, very absurd. Like, can't take it completely seriously, except that it leads us to getting a new item. The rainbow carriage is very important for the rest of our story, because it becomes, like, the final attack weapon, which is really wild, but yeah, it just is an interesting episode.
It's a very interesting take on how they get the power up is the real thing.
Yes.
Because we've had this episode at least twice before in Precure. Mm-hmm. There was one time when, in Yes, Nozomi was Cinderella, mm-hmm. and her Prince Charming was Coco. Mm. And then we've also had it in Smile, because Smile is the fairy tale season, when Miyuki was Cinderella, and Rika was Prince Charming. Mm. I guess they didn't want to make Muff run Prince Charming.
I love that Mofurun is Cinderella. I think that is really funny. I think it's really, really sweet, because it shows again that, like, she is as important a member of the team, even if she is not a cure in the series itself. That part is very cute. I think it's really fun to have her be the star of the story.
I just love whenever Muff Run is just a focus in an episode. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. She is a very, very successful character as far as, like, popularity and all of that. I think it's really fascinating. Just the other day, I was at my local used nerd goods shop and saw that, like, you know, there's a great little section of, like, Precure and other magical girl stuff, but mostly Precure. And even trying to buy a Mofurun doll in 2021, not in the package anymore, it's, like, still very expensive. I was very surprised. So she is very, very popular, I would say.
Still very popular to this day. She still outranks a lot of fairies, even the fairies that we get after Mahoutsuka. Mm. She's still high on my list.
She's just so good. But yeah, so it is through her and her weird dream that we get that rainbow carriage. And then a few episodes later, they figure out that despite all the legends, there's actually yet one more Linkle Stone, and that is the Alexandrite. And that is what they use to level up their transformation and use a final new attack, which is another, like, for me, a reference to previous Precure seasons, because it is the Extreme Rainbow. It is so fun to watch. Yeah. With the second half of the series, there's a lot more really fun little things. Also, this is a very unique season in that they completely redo the opening theme song halfway through. For example, the previous season, Go Princess, and a few other seasons have done this as well, where they use the second half of the theme song for the second half of the series, but Mahou Tsukai is the only one that has a theme song part two and a completely separate single you have to buy to get both sides of the song. It is expanding on the story and is referencing the original song in a lot of ways, but is also just like celebrating that we now have a third member of the group and all of that. It is really fun. Yeah, goodness, I can't think of any particular episodes I want to touch upon before we get to like the final stuff. Talking about our second set of villains, the Muho or Mujik or Nuljik, I don't know, however you want to translate them, but they're a kind of anti-magic group of different kind of figures. They all look a little similar to like certain kinds of mythical creatures and all of that. They're kind of interesting. I don't feel very strongly about them for some reason, but I'm not sure if that's just because like that's just how I feel about the season in general with the villains, but they kind of go through the same things, and they're all working for the mysterious, unknown, unseen Deuce Mast. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think of the second set of villains?
I would say the second set of villains weren't as interesting, but that's only because Gamatsu is by far my favorite out of all of them. There's Laboot, who is the genie, and again, he's easily taken out. By, again, the Extreme Rainbow, one of my personal favorite final attacks. There's Shanice, who is a monster. He was the one I kept calling ugly every time he appeared. I just really hated his face. He was not pretty at all. There was Binyo, who was, the only female of the group. Again, I thought she was interesting. She wasn't ugly in the slightest. She was actually very pretty. And then there was Orba, by far a personal favorite out of all of them. He was kind of like the intellectual thinker of all of them. Honestly, he was a very cold, manipulative person. I really wish he showed his stuff a little bit more. In fact, he did a lot more to the cures than the other two really did. And another thing that adds on to how cold and manipulative he is that he has one of my other favorite characters, who was Chigun, as his spy.
Shakitsu, I barely remember him. It's funny because it's like I just watched this series and I'm like, who is he again? But yeah, he's like whatever. But so Benigyo is the only female villain, like you said, in this group. She's like also super powerful, but she's also like the most scantily clad villain Precure has had so far. Yeah, this comes up a lot on the podcast. I think we talk about it most weeks, where a lot of villains, especially female villains, are usually dressed a lot more scantily than any other characters in the series, and Precure is no exception to that rule, unfortunately. But it's just like kind of shocking to see. I remember when I first saw her, I was like, really? Okay, that's interesting.
I also thought it was interesting, but I didn't want it to be like, oh, the reason that I didn't want to finish this season because of how this character's dressed. Okay. But I also thought this was a design that they probably wanted to use on somebody else. But they said, let's just make this a villain and be done with the design. So that's possibly why certain villain cures look like this, because I would probably hate a cure if they were dressed in kind of that outfit.
They would never give a cure that outfit because, like, even having certain cures with like exposed stomachs has in the past been a source of parent complaint. Now it seems to be okay because we had in Tropical Rouge, we have two characters with exposed stomachs, or I guess three now. So I guess things might be changing in general, but they would never have a cure dressed like this because, you know, we have like very, very young kids dressing up as cures with their costumes and so on. Like,
and the fact that the cures themselves are minors.
But yeah, like just generally, it is something that I don't think will ever happen because of the extremely young target audience for Precure. So I wouldn't be worried about that. I feel like, I mean, there's nothing wrong with having scantily clad characters, but the fact that it's always a villain. And then like, I think part of it is that like, so Benigyo, if no one's seen her, her skin is pink and then like all of her adornments are red. So, like, she doesn't look human at all. Like, she's humanoid, but she doesn't look like a human being. And there's even a joke because she's the villain of the Christmas episode where someone thinks that she is Santa because she is all red. So, like, that part is whatever, but it's like, you know, all the guys are very well dressed. They are completely covered. So I think, like, if it was like something where all of the characters were scantily clad, then it would be a little better, but the fact that they never do that is where the issue comes in. And then the fact that it is only the evil characters look like that is also sending a bad message, basically, is the issue there. Let's talk about Chikurun, because Chikurun is both a really cute, tiny little arc, and then also, like, ends up becoming very important to revelations about the lore of the whole show. So Chikurun is a little bee fairy who loves to collect honey, but is, for reasons unknown to us, working for Orba to get information and steal the Linkle Stones from the Cures, which at this point they basically always keep in like a little bag for when they need to use it in battle and so on. And, you know, from the beginning, he is worried that he's going to get found out by the Cures, but they always trust him and he becomes like a regular part of their shenanigans in their daily life. Yeah, it's very interesting to see that it's not until the end when he finally does take the stones, he really feels guilty, of course. And, you know, because he did make friends with them, especially Mofurun, which was interesting. And then he was able to see the wrong of his ways. And yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. What do you think about Chikurun?
I honestly think that that character should do more of these kind of pure redemption, where a character is introduced but is not necessarily pure evil. And I feel like they are doing that with, actually, Tropical Rouge, with Ella's character, the little shrimp maid that we have in Tropical Rouge. And I thought that was interesting. But again, I like that where they did with it is that, yeah, Chikurun is working for them, but he's not completely evil. He knows that they're doing bad things. It's just that he doesn't have the necessary courage to oppose them. And I think that's kind of what the Precures were kind of giving him. Like, they didn't actually suspect him of being evil, and they just trusted him. And that's kind of what really makes the Precures kind of a good role model to children. Yeah, there are people that you might not know, but you can easily give them the hand and tell them, hey, I want to be your friend. And that's kind of what I really enjoyed about him, especially considering that Mufferon was the one closest to him. Because it's so adorable how even though Mufferon isn't necessarily like the Cures, she knows for a fact that Chikurun has a good heart, and that that Chikurun doesn't want to hurt anyone.
Yeah, and it's really great to see, like, from the beginning, we know, the audience knows that he is there to betray the Cures, but we get to see him go through this whole process of learning, these girls are really good, and I like them, I want to be friends with them, you know. It is very, very fun. And then, you know, he had been lost, like, he had strayed away from the fairy realm, and that's why he got, you know, kidnapped and used for evil and all of that. So the girls take him back to the fairy world, and that's where we learn a lot more about the fairy lore, and then also about the history of the magic world and the non-magic world, which used to be one place. And I think it's really interesting because, again, it's like a little sub-story that leads into more lore. From the very beginning of the series, and even in the catchphrase for the series, we know that this is a story about two worlds coming together. But it is through this backstory that we find out that there used to be one world that was all together, you know, of people who could use magic and couldn't use magic. And there was this goddess, the mother, Rapapa, who is very, very like all-knowing and seems to be like just like protective goddess. We don't know a lot about her really, but, you know, she had to fight against this guy, Deusmast, who we know is the current villain that is lurking in the shadows. We're going to have to fight at some point. It's in that battle that she used up all her energy, and that caused the split in the worlds. with that lore and everything, we have a few more fun episodes. Again, like, I wish we had the time to talk about every little episode, because there's all this, like, really fun stuff that happens kind of in between the big story stuff. But yeah, so getting to the final ending and final battle and all of that, they wake up one day and the worlds are back together. And this is also really interesting in that when they do that and everyone is like reacting to them and so on, no one realizes that the worlds should not be together except for the Precure.
And that magic is just kind of a normal thing. Mm-hmm. I think in this world we see like Pegasus just flying around. Mm-hmm. We see mermaids flying through the air. We see magic being used, and nobody believes that the world shouldn't be normal except for the cures.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it's because of the fact that they were cures, but mm-hmm. I don't want to say that because that's kind of lazy writing.
I mean, it probably is something that simple, you know. It doesn't have to be that deep. It's Precure.
Yeah. Just Precure nonsense.
But it's just like, yeah, so basically we find out Deus Mass is really just the ultimate chaos, and he put the worlds together to consume them all and into chaos. But this is also where Ha-Chan comes in, because Ha-Chan is basically the new Rapapa in a way. But if she can, you know, use her powers to break the worlds apart again, it's going to cause them to be so far apart, basically, that they won't be able to travel between the worlds anymore. And since we know that Mirai is from one world and Riko's from another, that means that when all is said and done, they're going to be separate forever. And it's like, of course, really intense and tragic and all of that. But the final battle is so exciting. They use all of their moves and, you know, Ha-Chan becomes huge. She becomes the new mother of Papa. She becomes a goddess. I didn't mention before, but it is important to remember. And also, this is, again, a definite nod to the Max Heart season, that the spirits of the Lingual Stones get collected throughout the second half of the season based on like different activities and stuff that they do. And so once they're all collected, then that becomes like even more powerful, basically. It's interesting. It's a lot of lore. This is a very lore heavy season.
Very lore heavy. It's a lot of lore. Like, not just lore, but also world building too.
Mm-hmm.
Because with most of the other seasons, kind of backtracking, we are never really exploring the other world.
Mm-hmm.
I would say at most, I want to say Smile did more world building than the others, but that's to be debatable, because I also believe Heartcatch also did some world building when it came to knowing about the Heart Tree and the Precure's legacy.
Yeah.
But with Mahouskai, we are also knowing about the magic school. We also see the magic shopping district. We know about the Mermaid Cove, the Enchanted Forest where we meet the Pegasus. We also learn about islands that are just high in the sky, that are just flying in the clouds. It's honestly, again, very lore heavy and a lot of world building.
Yeah.
I wish that Precure did this more often. The only other season that has done this, if not better, is Star Twinkle.
Hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because like the idea of like going to another world, in that case, it's many worlds in Star Twinkle. But yeah, in Mahoutsky, I think it is about two worlds. And so you're going to learn about both worlds. You got to know why, you know, the magic world is so amazing. And you know, by the end, you also figure out why these worlds have to be kept separate. And it's, you know, very, it's very sad, of course. But, you know, we understand that, like, this kind of thing happens sometimes. And, yeah, I think it's really cool. Again, the final battle is so exciting, so amazing. And finally, they're able to get everything finished. You know, they defeat Deus Mast. They split the worlds apart.
And then the sad moment that makes grown men cry.
Yeah, the separation is so intense, and of course, because of the lack of magic, this also means Mofudun is returned back to a normal teddy bear and all of that. Yeah, this season is super interesting because it starts the tradition of the Baton Pass episode, where the final episode of the series introduces the next leader for the next season, which is something that since this season has happened every year. But also, this is a season where we get to see everyone grow up. Of course, Kota is a goddess that's whatever, but that we see in that final episode, like the first half of episode 49 is the end of the final battle, and then the second half we see them as adults. We see like Mirai and all of her friends in this non-magic world. So we see what her life is like, you know, she's in college, she's studying different languages because she wants to explore the world, you know, learning about other cultures has become part of her life, clearly influenced by her experience. It's also interesting where like everyone knows what happened with the Precure and like the magic world, but they like think of it as like, oh yeah, remember that time when we were kids? Yeah, it's very heartwarming. And at the end, finally, Mirai is able to channel magic one last time and is able to connect to Riko. And so the final episode is them just spending the day together, catching up, finding out what happened. And Kotoha also shows up and is like, just randomly uses her magic to conveniently make them 14 years old again. So, and that part is also very funny because it's like a transformation sequence akin to their usual transformation sequence, but now they're just becoming kids. And then we get to this whole thing with, yeah, this really silly joke villain that's not serious, but
it's also essentially Dukaroxy, but not Dukaroxy. Mm-hmm. Essentially, it's a scarecrow that kind of looks like a chibi down version of Dukaroxy. If you guys have seen how Dukaroxy looks in the final battle, mm-hmm. essentially, it's like if that Dukaroxy gave birth to a cute, adorable little child scarecrow. Mm-hmm. And essentially the episode follows it around as it's stealing sweets, mm-hmm. which kind of leads into us meeting the cure of the next season, mm-hmm. which lo and behold, the motif in that is essentially sweets.
Yep.
So as they catch up to it, mm-hmm. we meet the new cure, mm-hmm. and she makes a big spiel about not taking away anyone's sweets, mm-hmm. which gives Miracle and Magical enough time to purify Dukaroxy and to be on his way. Mm-hmm. Also, Yamo is there and he takes Dukaroxy away.
Yeah, it is a very silly final episode, but it is also really fun. It's a very goofy high comedy kind of thing. So it's a really interesting thing that they started to do after that, you know, the baton pass and everything. And I'm glad they're doing it. I think it's a really fun aspect. Also, for whatever reason, this season was very lucky in that it got so many extra episodes. You know, it has 50 episodes. That's a really long season, even like compared to regular seasons that usually have like 47 or 48. This season in particular just had the chance to be really full of so many great things. Like every single episode feels unskippable and is just so much fun. But yeah, is there anything else you wanted to mention about this season?
I do want to say that I enjoy the fact that while this is a season that does a lot of duo stuff, it's a season that made a duo and then gave us a cure later on, which is something I enjoy. I love it when they can pull off a cure that can be on par with the duo. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that this season gave us alternate forms mm-hmm. for our cures, because in the opening, it shows off the alternate forms for Miracle and Magical. There's Daya, the regular form, and it kind of plays off the idea of the jewelry. So Mirai finds a diamond jewelry in her mom's shop. And her mother is like, you can pick out anything from this box. And she picks that object. How lucky would it have been had she not find it? Because that would have been very interesting to see how this series would have played off. Hmm. If Mirai didn't find that necklace. Hmm. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think that it's like, I mean, it's kind of like a whole like fate sort of thing with the two of them. Like with Liko as well, she didn't always have the necklace that she has. So like their necklaces come together to make the diamonds, which is the first transformation item. And the reason that she has it is that that necklace was something her sister had for some reason. But when she was a baby and she got her magic wand, that necklace kind of started glowing. And so her older sister Liz was like, oh yeah, this belongs to my sister, this is not for me. And so she gives it to her. And I think that it's like really, really fun. Like the idea of being a destined warrior isn't really a big thing in Precure. Most seasons, it's very clearly the characters have to make a choice and they have to really want to become Precure in order to become Precure. But this is a rare exception, I guess, because there've only been a few other seasons with this idea of like that they were always going to become those Precure, and their bond, like you can really feel the bond. And then with, you know, Ha-chan, I think that this season really has this kind of idea of family really strongly. Like, again, it's like three moms and a daughter, and it's really fun to think about in that way. But it's just a delightful season.
There are people who are probably going to be like, Mirai probably doesn't get as much development as, say, Riko does, because Riko's is notable. But honestly, Mirai develops a lot in this season, and you can tell that she has like a personality that's like, I'm excited about this. What is that? What is that? I need to find out what that is. That's her personality. She's not excited over like something like homework. Honestly, out of all the characters in this season, I actually really clicked with Mirai, mainly because of the idea of that is basically my personality. I look at everything as exciting and fresh and something that I just want to know more about. The other thing that makes me really click with Mirai is that we both grew up carrying a stuffed animal. I want to say around the time when Barney was a big thing, I also carried around a Barney plush. I even had some of the old VHS tapes of some Barney episodes. And even there was a movie about a rainbow egg. I loved the movie so much. And honestly, I clicked with Mirai. Like, that's something that I really found rather interesting. I also kind of want to bring up this idea of, and this is something we didn't talk about, but the idea of separation in this season. Because of the fact that they're obviously from separate worlds, they're obviously going to have to go back to the other worlds at one point or another. And this is even brought up in the last episode we explore in the magic world. Not the last episode entirely, but you get the idea. Essentially, it's the final exam for spring break, where basically they're going up against Riko's sister, who just so happens to be a teacher at the magic school. And essentially, their test is to use magic to make a flower bloom on their hats. And if they make them bloom, they pass the test. And Riko was basically just like, I don't want to pass this test. Why are you doing so well, Mirai? And this is a very touching moment. They're also on brooms when they're doing this test, by the way. But Mirai basically is like, you are going to be a great sorcerer, and I'm going to go back home. I don't know if we're ever going to get a chance for this again. So I'm going to help make sure you succeed. And it's such a very sweet moment. I love this episode, especially the fight, because they also transform into their Ruby form, which personally, my favorite form out of all of them. I also hold a soft spot for Sapphire, because I think it's great when they do something unique. And what's unique about this form is that they're wearing sandals. But in the fight, when they're doing their finisher, the Ruby Passionale, you can see every time that they show off the final attack, they hold hands. And that's kind of the thing with the duos, where they have to hold hands in order for them to really power up their attacks. You can tell when Riko holds Mirai's hand and she squeezes it. That is actually, in my opinion, a reference to Fatawa.
Yes.
When Black and White were fighting the more strong opponent, Black squeezes White's hand just out of anger for the monster that hurt her little brother. And I thought that was honestly a very good touch.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, it is really cool. The form changes themselves do, for me, harken back to, you know, Splash Star being a season where the girls had two forms, though in that time they had two different cure names. But they're still always miracle and magical in this season. But I love each and every form change because they all seem like they have, you know, different techniques, different fighting styles that they can use. And so it's like, oh, we have this battle, we're going to use this form, and so on. It looks awesome, you know, obviously, like each form is like so different as well. I think, you know, they're very unique designs. And I think that part is also really, really fun to see. Do you have a favorite form change?
It is a very big tie between both Ruby and Sapphire. Hmm. Ruby because it's personally my favorite color. And I just like the way that they incorporate passion with strength, because that is a very good nod to our fire cures, Rouge and Sunny, who are essentially the muscle of the group. We also have Sapphire, which, again, I love the form because they tried to incorporate some of the mermaid style into it. And I feel like that is kind of a mixture of Cure Mermaid, and that's kind of where they got Lemire's form.
Hmm.
Even if that's not the way that they wanted it, I want to believe that's where the reference comes from, because they're the only real cures that wear sandals in their cure form.
Mm-hmm.
Topaz, again, is like a form that is also interesting because the yellow balls are kind of also there, and it's shown a lot that, yeah, they can pretty much make anything with those yellow floating orbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really cool to see how that works. It's like, just also in terms of Precure in general, that the Topaz style is so unique. I don't know if I have a favorite, because I think they're all really good. It's really hard to say. And any Magical Girl series that has these kind of form changes are going to get me every time. They're really fun to see. And I think that they really utilize them well in this season as well. Before we go, I do want to mention, as far as like potentially problematic elements. So I kind of mentioned this already with the Cinderella episode, with, you know, dressing up male characters as women for comedy is something that is, unfortunately, like a major thing that's still in a lot of children's media even today, but it is definitely tied to a lot of problematic things, especially regarding like queerphobia and transphobia. So it's like one of those unfortunate things that like comes up too much, and so you have to just kind of point it out when it does happen. That part made me uncomfortable, despite the fact that I enjoyed the rest of that episode. There are definitely ways to do that in a way that can still be funny, but is not like saying it's funny when a man wears a dress, if that makes sense. So there's that aspect. Another character I wanted to mention from the magic world is one of the shopkeepers who owns the clothing store, I guess, Francois. So he is a very, very effeminate man, which is fine. You know, he's great. But I know that for some people, that character can make them uncomfortable. So I did want to point that out. He is a little bit of a stereotype. I think he is very similar to Shut from Go Princess, I want to say. It kind of felt like, especially because Go Princess was the season that came before, that he was kind of a continuation of that kind of character. And then the other thing, I suppose, again, I don't feel very strongly about it, but feel like it needs to be mentioned, is something that happens a lot with Japanese Magical Girl series, because partially because of how these things were presented in Japanese pop culture, but the idea of like conflating genies and other kinds of magic user type characters. Of course, these are from different cultures and they have very different significance and so on, but yeah, that part does feels like it needs to be said. Yeah, and then the fact that his name is Labu feels like a reference, not maybe specifically to Dragon Ball, but at least to the idea of like bibbidi bobbidi boo, which is, I don't know, it's like nonsense words, whatever, but that's all I have to say, I guess, on that front. But yeah, I think, you know, we've been chatting for quite a while. I don't have anything else to talk about with this season, except that everyone should watch it if they haven't already. It is, again, my favorite Precure season, and I think an excellent Magical Girl season in general. You know, again, it is, we got all these older Precure seasons incorporated, as well as a bit of Sailor Moon with the final villain, a bit of Doremi with Hachan, and all these, you know, references to older Magical Girl shows. So I think it is just all around a really excellent series. That means we are down to our final question, which is for you, Blazix. Have you ever imagined a magical persona for yourself?
I actually did. That's kind of where I'm working on with my fan-made series of the Precure. So my team is essentially called the Elemental Warriors, which plays off the idea of it being kind of something that a lot of the fan base really want in Precure. but we're not sure if it's actually going to come, but essentially magical boys. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we've had magical boys in certain other franchises, Tuxedo Mask in Sailor Moon, and even Cat Noir from Miraculous Tales of Ladybug and Cat Noir. Mm-hmm. I want to kind of do something like that, and I made a character, essentially, this is years back, and this is actually when I'm watching Power Rangers, and I thought, why not make a Power Ranger? So I thought of a hero that's kind of based off of fire, but instead of being passion, as per usual, when you have a person who stands for fire, it usually stands for a passion, instead of it being courage. And I thought of maybe having him get a catchphrase that really sticks up for that courage, because of how he would defend anybody to his, not saying dying breath, but, you know, essentially what he would stand for. A fire that would never go out. The protector of most people who could easily, I don't know, I guess you could say he's a protector of anybody who stands up for courage. He's the fire of courage. He would be Phoenix, essentially. Originally, his name was going to be Inferno, but a lot of people talked to me, and when I came up with the idea, said, you just call him Phoenix because that's what my name originally was, and they know me as Phoenix. His catchphrase would be, the fire in my heart will never be extinguished. It's actually a play on Pure Beats. I'll play my heart's beat, or I forget what her catchphrase was. I thought it was kind of interesting that she had a catchphrase, and that's kind of what I remembered from Sweet. Because Beat honestly became my favorite character in Sweet. So I kind of wanted to make a character that kind of had that catchphrase, but not directly that catchphrase. Because it doesn't fit with his character.
Yeah, that makes sense. But very interesting. Great. So, Blazix, thank you so much for coming on Sparkleside Chats. Where can people find you and follow you online to talk to you about Mahotsky and other Precure?
So again, I do have a YouTube channel. It is mostly reaction based, but hopefully by 2022, by the time of this podcast coming out, I will be starting my own plush series called Sora and Tari's Wonderful World. You can find it on Blazix Reacts, or soon it will probably just be called Blazix, because I just don't want to change up the channel and say it's essentially a plush channel. I'm also on Twitter at JacksonJordan41. I'm also on Discord. I actually have two Discord servers. I have one called Blazix Nights Hangout for the YouTube channel. And if you want to talk with me and other Precure fans about Precure, especially on this season, you can come to the Zenith Precure Club. It's actually a pun on my friend's club, the Ultimate Precure Club. So don't go to this server. Come to mine.
It's called
the Zenith Precure Club, or the True Precure Club if I've changed it again. Because I usually am. I usually change it because of, you know, this is fun.
Cool. So links to all that will be in the show notes. So thank you again for coming on the podcast, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and I hope we inspired you to watch Mahotsky Precure or Maho Girls Precure or Witchy Precure, depending on the name, because this has like a zillion names. Happy Maho de Hajike Chao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Sparkleside Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you like it, and don't forget to tell your friends about the show if you think they'd be interested. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparklesideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled A-Y-U, and you can find me at Ayu She Knows, AYUSHEKNOWS. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Let us know if there's a topic you want covered or a fan or creator you want to hear from by filling out the form in the show notes. You can also join the Discord for this podcast to talk about Magical Girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. You can also find that link in the show notes. Show notes can be found on your platform of choice or at anchor.fm/sparkleside. If you can support the podcast financially, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/ayushinos. You can also support me directly as an artist there. I do commissions and also sell prints on Imprint. Another way to support us one time is by buying something off the Amazon Japan wishlist. This helps with getting more access to Magical Girl content that we can discuss in future episodes. Feel free to purchase from the U section, as we are not picky here. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at A Few Bruises. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical.
They're more...